you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey, Colony fans. Welcome back to Colony, the official podcast. As always, I'm your host, Tara Bennett, and I'm a senior editor and producer for Sci-Fi Wire, and I'm thrilled for us to be able to dig into this episode, Puzzle Man 3.2 for Colony. And as always, we are so excited to have with us our esteemed guests. First off, we've got showrunners extraordinaire, the return of co-creator and executive producer Ryan Condal.
Hello.
And executive producer Wes Took.
Glad to be here.
How are you guys?
Doing well. Feel like we've really grown since the last episode.
Yeah, since last episode. We've got, we're a road show now. We're moving on. We've got a great reintroduction of somebody that we have missed. And that missed person is the returning Puzzle Man himself, Tori Kittles. Hello, sir.
Puzzle Man. I like that. I like that. It's almost like Marvin Gaye's Trouble Man.
I like it, right?
You know? Yeah, I dig
that.
I wish we had known that, because that would have been an awesome theme song for the
dialogue-free
first.
Well, you got to talk to me about these things. You know, I got a lot of information up here. Some non-usable, but some is, you know.
I think there's still a chance for the supercut for the home video release.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, there you go.
New budget.
We'll do
we can
commentary.
Record it right here.
We'll do some commentary with that.
Yeah.
You know? We'll start that Kickstarter for the fans to pay for said
start working on the
needle drop.
All right. I got it. I'll come up with something.
I really do not like how Tori's making me feel about my voice.
Me neither.
You need to add a little bit of inflection in that. Come from the gut.
Yeah.
Dulcet.
I don't have that kind of gut, Tori.
We're going to end up hearing.
We saw you do crunches in this episode. I do not have that kind of gut.
Was I doing crunches in this episode? I haven't seen this episode, you know.
Yes, you were doing crunches. Yeah.
Really?
I'll be the girl on the panel here going, yeah, he was doing crunches.
I thought that was cut out. You know, Tim Southam. You know, what can I say? Anything for Tim.
They know. Yeah. They know what's important and what to focus on in the episode. It was a great moment.
I thought the steam room was a little bit stretching credibility. You know?
I was pushing it a little bit.
You know, it's always that thing about vanity. You know what I mean? That you try to keep away from your work, but then it slowly creeps in. Vanity, ego, they sort of go hand in hand.
You're doing your work.
We're writers. We wouldn't know anything about that.
Climbing mountains, hiking. You got to show off the handiwork there. So that's good. So this episode is a wonderful return for you. But the very beginning of the episode is actually another return of a character, which is a surprise. Helena wakes up. Last time we saw her was the end of season 2. Total rendition happening. Everybody's scuttling. And this really interesting cold open gives us a little more information about some things that Snyder said in the first episode about the defense system and an incoming battle, possibly.
Well, we were concerned whether she's going to come back at all because he was out chasing ghosts.
Was the Helena of any of season 3 very much in question for you guys?
Once you get any network money, do you really want to fly to Vancouver?
cold,
exactly.
Chilly, rained on.
Our core cast is obviously bonded to the show,
but whether
they like it or not,
for
life. But yeah, Allie is an important part of the show, but she's a guest star, so she's kind of an employee at her option and our option. And we knew that her show had gotten picked up in the off season, so we at least knew that we were able to plan for it. But the nice thing about our show is that people tend to like working on it and being on it. So we've had this happen in the past where people have gotten these other gigs, but they've carved out days or, you know, episodes or whatever with their new studio.
Yeah.
And Allie was kind enough to do that with us and fought hard for it. And
oh, great.
It was very challenging because she was on a traditional network show that was churn and burn.
Right.
She was in it a lot, shooting a lot of days per episode. So it was hard to, we had to kind of shake her free for a day here, a day there. And she made a commitment. She gave us a number of episodes that she wanted to be in this year.
Great.
And God bless her, flew up to Vancouver and came prepared every time. I mean, she's awesome. We just love working with her.
And thank goodness, because her character is obviously incredibly important.
Yes.
Evidenced by the first scene.
Not a lot of characters have total information. And even she looks disconcerted in the beginning in this cold open, like, what exactly am I seeing? And she's piecing together all of these different languages being talked about, obviously. Tell me a little bit about how much you wanted to show in that.
As with any great and powerful authoritarian autocratic regime, you know, you kind of fail upward in these situations. And as we see right now, every day, and she's achieved considerable power in this new capacity that she's in.
Right.
She's working out of the seat of the global authority in Davos and knows quite a bit and is in charge of the entire region that encompasses the Los Angeles colony, but then also other colonies on the Western seaboard. And probably is the character at this point in the show that knows the most about what's going on. But even to her, there are things that are kept and compartmentalized. Yeah. I mean, that's the big thing with his occupation is that because it's so tenuous and because so much is at stake, information is very much at a premium. So people are told things they need to know. They are told stories that perhaps make them more willing and pliable to be put into line. So we're seeing that even somebody like Elena, in this case, where she's very powerful and has oversight in multiple colonies, doesn't know everything that's going on. And you're just realizing, does anybody?
Yeah.
And what have they been told? And what do these people believe? And how is this possible that there's this massive global authority and information is so compartmentalized that somebody like her doesn't fully know what's going on? But that's the case. And that's made for a lot of fun in the storytelling.
And as a storytelling device, we also want to put pressure right at the top of the season.
Yeah.
So you come running out of the first episode and the Bowmans are on the run. Now you want to open up the world. And we don't want people to feel like the old rules are applying.
Right.
You want people to feel like there's pressure and that something is coming.
Yes.
And that our heroes are on the run and it's for a reason.
And we're not being precious with mythology. It's just like, here it is, just dealing it out because every answer begs more questions and clarifications and things. But also you want to see how the characters react once they actually have knowledge and what they do. And this is certainly not good news for anybody.
It seems a little scary on a global universal scale. But then we come out of that cold open to a very different dynamic for Broussard. And we get that great deserted shot on sunset. It's very I Am Legend-y. It feels amazing that you're just on your own, doing your own thing. The stress of what the block used to look like is pretty much gone. You're just...
Well, the stress is gone. The stress from the block is gone. I don't know if
the stress in general is gone.
But, you know, when I read it, it made me think of the real K Letters to a Young Poet. You guys, I don't know if you know that, but he talks about solitude. And there's something to be gained in solitude, but there's also, no matter how much understanding you can get by being alone and you can work out all these things mentally and intellectually, you're still alone.
Yeah.
And you need people, I think, to survive. And I think, you know, we find him in a place where he's trying to discover what is his purpose. You know, each season it's been different. Okay, who's the occupation? Let me find out about the occupation. And then it's like, okay, let's go kill these fuckers. And now it's like, well, who? Who do we kill? And how do we do this? And, you know, how do you make a difference in this world? You know, who's the real enemy? In the authoritarian regime, constant misinformation is coming out. We're seeing that daily. Misinformation on top of misinformation. So where do you go to get this information and who can you trust?
Right.
It makes the world a real hard place to live in.
And we see, you know, you have a very small circle of information where you're just reaching out. It's mostly just so you have informationally, how's everyone doing? Any passengers? And then that's it. So that is still as isolated as you can possibly be, which is interesting because, as you said, Broussard started to connect again. Katie, finding advocates, finding allies, having something to fight for.
And then losing it all.
Yeah,
it's a hard thing to find people to trust.
Yes.
Especially in this, you know, world of occupation. And, you know, when you find those people, you want to hold on to them because everything is unclear. You know, so if you have one person you can have a real conversation with and believe that they're giving you truth, that changes your whole world and it changes your perception of people, of humanity, because it's something to believe in.
Yeah.
And in this particular world, hope goes a long way. It goes a really long way. And when you lose that, what do you do? How do you rebound?
That was the other interesting thing about this character. Just like we wanted to reset the Bowmans with a 6-month jump, we kind of wanted to be able to do a hard reboot on Broussard, which is that here's a guy who season one was following someone, thought he believed in them, was betrayed. Season two tries to collect his own group, is betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of tragically, two other members die. Feels a huge amount of responsibility for that.
Yeah.
And when you catch up with him, you realize he's been paying a penance. And he spent 6 months alone working to ferry people into the other block, go through this incredibly tedious task of assembling something in the search for meaning.
Yes.
So you're starting his character this season in a totally different place, which is this person who doesn't know if he's ready to reengage with the world, but is kind of handed this piece of information that demands that he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the first time that we've seen Broussard doing the human resistance action, which is, you know, something that he would have never done in season one. I mean, he told Katie flat out in season one, this is not what we do. And here we catch up to him. He's on his own. He finds this mother and her child, and at great risk to himself and to the whole operation, to the whole cause of the greater resistance, smuggles them under this tunnel because he's trying to, you know, as he said, balance the ledger. There's a very interesting evolution for the character is like the experience of being a resistance fighter in this world would tend to dehumanize the person and make them value life less and see life even more cheaply. But the things that Broussard has been through both in his life prior to the arrival and since have actually made him I'm in a way more human.
Yeah.
At least to this point.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's also a certain amount of you survive these things. It's sort of a survivor's remorse that you have. And why me? Why am I still here? And it is. It's searching for that purpose. Why me? Why did I survive? How can I be useful? How can I help?
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's who he is. He's a person who wants to help, and he'll put himself on the line for that.
Yeah. And we've seen that clearly. You know, he does want to help, but just what that costs him, the cute bonding with Owen and giving him the candy and having him help put the memos back together. And then that's such a gut punch later on when we find out that none of them made it. And that could be a moment for a character to go, all right, that's it. No more connection whatsoever. But we meet a new character that you guys introduce. So I listened carefully, but I'm just calling her Dispatch at this point because there's no name for her. But she has been the voice that's actually cared for you on the line, who's just wanted to know, are you all right? You're by yourself. You know, this kind of isolation is not good for you. This mother and this son have been lost. And now this other person comes into the page. It's a moment where we really get to see Broussard make a choice. Do I just wholly reject that, or do you move on and keep on with this path of connecting again?
Yeah, we're talking about, like, you know, trying to find somebody that you can actually trust. And then you have this voice, you know, he's never met her. He doesn't know who she is, but it's a comforting voice. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to think, like, when your world is so desolate that just a voice will keep you going or keep you believing. You know, these studies that you see people that go to incarceration and they're thrown into solitude.
Solitary,
and,
yeah.
And, you know, I think you can talk about like the Khalif Browder story where this kid was in solitude for, you know, over 100 days or something. And, you know, and they call it the Bing, where you completely lose your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But Broussard has this voice. You know, he has this person who's sort of keeping him attached to at least a certain reality.
Right.
And it gives him a purpose. And then so, you know, he becomes this coyote, you know, and you know, you can get into like things of walls, huh? You can build a big wall, but you can still find a way under it or around it or over it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always a way around a wall. And so, again, it's just, it's about purpose for him. And she connects him to a purpose. And then when he meets her and she's in a physical form, it takes on a whole new relationship because now you have this voice and that you've relied on, but it's in the flesh. And is this person someone I can trust?
Right.
Or is this person not someone I can trust? Or maybe she brings out things in him that he didn't even realize.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. It's the text dating versus meeting in real life.
Yeah. Well, and another thing for Broussard, whereas in the past, I think his character would have immediately rejected any kind of relationship with a total stranger that walked in the door with this story that, you know, everybody was wiped out. But she somehow survived.
Yeah, that's a sketchy story when she walks in.
Totally, with a flesh wound. And it's like, well, how the hell do I know what you are? But we see a guy who's so at the end of his rope, I think, and also so in need of some kind of human empathy, some kind of human connection, that he's willing to take chances that he never would have taken in the past. And he does have a relationship with her voice, and he's trusting and relying on that, relying on his instincts that he's honed over years of doing this. And nothing is telling him that she's necessarily lying or anything like that. But this is a necessary but tenuous partnership moving forward for the two of them.
And jumping to the other storyline, because obviously we go back to the Bowmans, and there's a great parallel in terms of trusting and figuring out who do we trust, how deeply do we go. You've got the idea now that you introduced last season with Noah and her camp, and the Bowmans have the gauntlet, and they have an opportunity now to push forward and not just be sitting in the cabin for 6 months. They can follow through with the thing that might actually help crack what's going on or give them more information. They have to give over a lot of trust and just go with it, get stuck on a train, you know, where are we going? All of that's a real big trust fall for the Bowmans in this episode.
Yeah, it's reflective of the Broussard story. Yeah. That you have to take a leap of faith. You can either hide in the woods or you can re-engage with the world. And Katie's perspective clearly is, for nothing else other than the sake of our kids, we can't just hide in a cabin.
Right.
We can't ignore that this is happening. That at some point when traumatic events are occurring, you have to stand up and be counted or you just have to disappear. And she would rather stand up. And I think Will understands that on some level, yet he's also by nature more cautious and having been through the wars is concerned about the possible consequences.
We get to see now that there is more infrastructure than we thought. When the train that's going to be able to take them to where they need to be, there's talk of other blocks. We've definitely heard of the ones down in California, but we're hearing about Seattle and such. I just love the idea of actually dumping them in a train because it's like the most claustrophobic way of going, what are we going to see when we get there? So tell me about the idea for that and executing it.
I mean, that was always the challenge is we'd lived inside these walls. What does it look like outside the walls?
Mm-hmm.
And you get a hint of it in episode one where you realize that these walker drones and they have prescribed routes. But if you're off one of those routes, you seem to be more or less kind of off the grid.
Yeah.
The Broussard journey and the Bowman journey is going to allow us an opportunity to look what is behind that.
The Broussard journey was cold.
Had moments of frigidity.
Yes. Very cold. The north. In the winter. In the water.
Welcome to new, new environment. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Atmosphere. Yeah. Mist and sadness.
Seeing the world now, finally, like you said, it's been a world inside walls, little tastes here and there of outside of it. But now we really get to see what the landscape looks like in the world post-invasion.
More of that is coming. I mean, the advantage of the train situation is that you miss a large swath of landscape. And as you watch Broussard walk out into the landscape at the end of this episode, yeah. you presume we're going to get some things filled in for us. We're not going to be redundant. You're not going to see it both right. in the Bowman storyline and in the Broussard storyline.
Yeah. The train allows us to go a lot more miles and get them somewhere else.
And speaks to an underlying infrastructure, which is interesting.
Yeah.
It's automated. Where are these trains going? What are they filled with? What is their purpose?
You know, yes.
They find cereal, but what is happening outside the walls? Where is the food coming from?
Right. They have to keep sustaining just to keep the labor force, even if that's what it is, going. So.
Yeah, not to give too much away, but I think we want to spend a lot of time on kind of logistics moving forward.
Mm. Totally. Specifically trade routes yeah. and tariffs.
Yeah.
Very interesting to our fans.
We did a deep dive into guns and ammo, you know.
I like. Yeah, yeah, there you go. All of that. We get the UPS version of how to make all of the still yeah. happy yeah. trajectories. You also introduce another character, Vincent. Kind of the first point of contact for a circle of people that they may be trusting.
This wonderful actor named Waleed Zewaider, who we had seen for a role in the show previously, and schedules didn't work, but we had really liked him, mm-hmm. and we're always looking to write a role for him, and we're really intrigued by the opportunity that presented here, because we were looking for somebody. Noah was so, when she came into the world last season, was so larger than life,
yeah.
and seemed like...
Crashing in planes.
Yeah, yeah, parachuting out of planes and jumping into a pool and all that, and seemed like the idealized version of the fabled resistance movement
right,
that you'd
yeah.
hope would exist outside the walls, that's so-called John Connor.
Mm-hmm.
But Waleed to us presented this interesting, complex character that felt more like a real person,
right.
but also felt like somebody that inherently you would want to trust, right?
Yeah.
Wes always talked about there was a quiet dignity that Waleed brought to the role mm-hmm. and that we saw in Vincent, and we like that. And it's intriguing to meet somebody in this situation at gunpoint as a train door opens, and
yeah.
God knows where in the middle of the night, that's going to be somebody that you inherently mistrust. But there's just something about the warmth of that guy and mm-hmm. the thing that he projects. And you sense that this guy probably had a family and maybe was a father himself, just in the way that he kneels down and talks to the kids. Like, you
yeah.
want to trust him. You want to believe that there's a bunch of people just like him waiting in this camp for them. And we felt like a character like that was a very interesting resistance character, because even though our show is a genre show and we have our moments of action and whiz-bang special effects and all that, we are trying to tell a grounded human story in all this. He felt like somebody that could be the entree into this world that did feel real and three-dimensional, didn't feel like a superhero, didn't feel like a stock villain,
right?
That kind of thing. But is everybody at this camp in this organization like him? No, probably not.
No, and he gives them vital information when he gives
correct.
The little tease of going, camp can be political. I mean,
yeah.
that's a big piece of information for someone you don't know to be able to give that to you.
And that comes from how Waleed plays the character. You do inherently trust him.
Yeah.
And it's playing off the idea, I think, for the audience. You've been wanting to find a meaningful resistance group for 2+ seasons of the show.
Right.
And suddenly you're there and you find someone who's projecting this incredible warmth, is basically saying, we'll take care of you. But Will is wary enough to ask the question. The answer he gets is not entirely comforting.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly. Going back to Broussard, one, I love that you guys tie in the historical perspective of that big memo of the shredded pile of Broussard's existence for quite some time. I'm like, did you write that to torture poor Tori? As in,
more the art department.
Would that absolutely make you completely mental in real life, Tori, like having to put all those pieces of paper together?
What was interesting was that I didn't have to act it, because there was definitely a method to trying to put all of those pieces of paper together. And so while we were shooting it, each time you'd start over, we'd go back to the beginning. And so I was like, okay, I got to get this strip
yeah.
here. This strip has to line up here. This strip has a line up here to try to make the cuts match.
Right.
And yes. Yes. It's, I'm trying not to curse because I'm working on my language here. But yeah, it was fucked up. It speaks to really where he is as a character. The fact that he would sit there and do that, to sift through millions of pieces of paper on a daily basis and then try to put them back together, that's a lot.
That is a lot. And the tying in of the Puzzle Women, which is such a great historical reference for it, which is great because it just shows that we keep repeating all kinds of things in life. So tell me a little bit about where that felt organic to push into the show.
That actually came from the writer, Mike Ostrowski, who did a wonderful job with the episode. New writer for us this season. We've known him for a little bit and liked him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he came to us with that We were thinking, I think, of like Argo, yeah. you know, and the burn bags that they failed yeah. to get out before. And you also just watching Ken Burns' Vietnam documentary, yeah. watched every frame of that thing, made it all
good
the way through.
Good for you. Yeah. That's a commitment.
Yeah, doing that homework. but it was great. And they talked a lot about that happening at the Saigon embassy, too, mm-hmm. as they were bailing out of there. So it's just, there's a historical echo in mm-hmm. that imagery that we've seen in a couple of bad situations through human history. So we always wanted to do that. That was always the idea for the episode. But Mike came in one day with the story about after the East Berlin and West Berlin were united after the wall fell. A bunch of people went in to make sure that the East Germans were held accountable for their horrible sins throughout the occupation. And they were called the Puzzle Women. There's this whole story about them. And, yeah. and they had to do all this completely
years
by hand. And it
years,
took years
yeah.
and years of work. And it just really tied everything together really nicely. And
yeah. It makes you think how easy we have it now, you know, like yeah. how easily information is disseminated to us on a daily basis. You
and
know
sold
what I mean?
To Russia.
Yeah, just put it on Facebook.
you email know, here, text
right.
here.
Yeah. Yeah, but even just, you know, text messages, you know, how easily we can get, like, someone has access to you 24 hours a day, whereas
yeah.
that wasn't always the case. People had to type things out or write things out.
Yeah.
You know, it was symbols in the beginning. So, you know, we've come a long ways, I guess.
I think yeah. it speaks well to Broussard's skills that he has quite the wall of completed memos put together
well,
in 6 months'
very,
time.
Very
you're good,
nimble,
man.
Very
you're good,
nimble
exactly.
fingers.
You may have hated it, but you're good. So there you go. Last shot of the episode, you go through the wall. He could have left with the Bowmans when it happened. He committed to stay, and now he's going to go with this new ally, hopefully. And there's a cool scene where they're in the tunnel, and we get to hear that odd pulsing noise, which, again, we've gotten little tidbits of this before, but it's very telling that Broussard kind of stops to just observe and listen to what that text sounds like in reality going through. Is there anything that we should gain from that, or just kind of notch it for the future?
Oh, notch it.
Not just for the future. So listen and rewind and listen again, because we did like big nerds. So.
It says Paul is dead if you slow it down. Play it backwards.
That's it. I knew it. That's perfect.
This is our goodbye to L.A.
It is. It's done.
The Bowmans left at the yeah. end of season two, and here's Broussard. So it was a home for 2 years.
Yeah. And it's a big moment for Broussard. And when you play that moment, in your mind, where's Broussard? Is this a big hopeful moment? Is it a scary moment for him? Does it just feel like it's the next stage that he just needs to? I mean, he's a doer. So is it just the next part of this whole journey for him?
Yeah, I think it's about opportunity. What that opportunity is unknown.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what the adventure is about, right?
Absolutely.
Walk into it.
Well, guys, the adventure continues. We will be back for episode 3, but I want to thank you guys again for being with us. Tori, you are welcome anytime.
I always said 3 curse words. I was trying not to say more than 4, and I did that. So
I think we should get a cuss jar for next time. Just,
you did
let's
some good
just
work
see.
Today, my friend.
Thank you, guys. Wes, Ryan, and we will return and talk about episode 3.
Great.
See you next time.
Thank you so much for listening and being with us this week, as always, for our Colony, the official podcast. And if you love the show, please let us know by leaving a review, subscribing on Art19, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, whatever your podcast source is. We're also gearing up to ask some fan questions. So if you've got something that you would want us to ask Ryan or Wes or maybe some of the wonderful guests that we've had on the show, we would love to hear from you. You can post easily on our comment section every week on our Sci-Fi Wire blog when we post the podcast on Wednesday nights, or you can find me on Twitter. My handle is Tara D. Bennett, and I will happily be able to pass along any of the questions that you may give us. And as always, this show would not sound as amazing as it does without my wonderful team. I'd like to thank producer Bartley Taylor, producer-editor Paul Terry, our mixer and masterer Dave Draper, and our engineer at the network studios Mike Casantini, and Trixie, our board operator. Thank you guys so much, and we can't wait to have you with us next week.